You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone! It went deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 133. I'm your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, we look back at some of our Indians MVPs as the site counts down and writes about them throughout the week. We'll look at some former Indians players heading to the World Series and sort of just talk about our thoughts on the Nationals and Astros in the World Series and the Yankees not in the World Series, which they're not for the entire decade, which is also nice. And we'll answer some of your questions. Joining me for all that and more is none other than Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I got a bug bite from a picnic. Ridiculous. I'm fine otherwise.
It's awful. It's been 3 weeks, and that's the biggest event that's happened. You got a bug bite at a picnic?
Well, it was a nice picnic otherwise. Had some sandwiches.
That's good, yeah. Yeah. They ruin everything. Bugs are the worst.
Well, you know, I don't. It may have been from something else. I don't know, but I got a bug
bite. I'd blame the picnic. There's always bugs around.
Other than that, the only other place I was at was bars. So, I mean, are there bugs at bars? Maybe. I don't know.
I'm sure. They're sneaky. They get everywhere, you know.
It's true. Bugs being
so. Did you happen to be at a bar when the Indians went on a 5-game slid there at the end of the season?
No, I went to one of those games though.
That's right. You were a trainer. You went to it as a Nationals fan, didn't you?
I just went to the game. I was wearing my Indians jersey, my Ryan Merritt Indians jersey.
At that point, it didn't matter, right? The Indians were out of it.
Yeah, it was finished. Yeah, everything was over with. Well, no, I think the one I went to, because it was the Friday game, there was still a glimmer of hope. Was it the Friday or the Saturday game? Because I was going to try and go to the one where...
Sunday was the end of the season.
Yeah,
I think Friday was the one where they died.
I believe it was one... I don't know. They got shelled. That's all I remember. So it was one of those games, yes. It was just a mess. And the Nationals proved they are a good team. And then they continue to prove that, which has been a lot of fun for this area for all, you know, 12,000 actual Nats fans and the other 800,000 bandwagoning idiots. I love
them. So what is it like? Do people care? And like, is there a lot of buzz in DC, the fact that the Nationals are in the World Series?
Man, I can't figure it out, to be honest with you, because they just won a year ago, right? They won a Stanley Cup, the Caps did. And I guess there's some fans, you know, but like through May, you could get a ticket to a Nats game for $5. So they were like 19-31. They were in the pits. Everyone was getting fired. No one in the city cared about them. It's a city of transplants, and it's a city of bandwagoners, and half the seats at Nats Park are owned by lobbyists or congressmen, basically, who are owned by lobbyists themselves. Political commentary. But
pause for a pause.
But I don't know. There's buzz, sure. Like, you know, walking around town, you have a lot of people wearing gear and stuff like that, but there was a fun little moment after they clinched their berth in the World Series. There was a guy down by the park interviewing people during their little, you know, there people were like dancing in the streets and whatnot, as one is wont to do. I was like, hey, how long? And the guy was like, you guys have a great time, right, huh? How long have you been a Nats fan? Since today! And it was like, you know, just moments like that it kind of encapsulates DC sports fandom. The only thing team people care about here is the Redskins, which is itself embarrassing on so many different levels.
So they kind of embrace the fact that everybody's a bandwagon?
I guess so. I mean,
which isn't terrible. I don't think. I've always said the bandwagon fans are fine. Like,
I mean, look,
your fan base.
The teams in DC aren't ever going to do badly as far as ticket sales and stuff, because, like I said, half the tickets are sold to either lobbyists or, you know, guys who work at Raytheon or whatever. So they'll always be fine, and it's great for people like me who just want to go to a game for cheap because you buy one in the secondary market for nothing because they just, you know, said lobbyists just post them there for nothing. You know, I'm going to be able to see the Golden State Warriors come to town to play the Wizards in like January or February. So I probably should get the scene for $40, which would be great.
Now, I don't know how much you read our comments on stuff, but you wrote about finding the little things in October, which
I'll be honest, I avoided those comments because I wasn't super happy with that article. So,
well, you wrote about Michael Brantley, which is awesome. Of course, he's great, and we all still love him. But then you said the Astros were the good guy team. And then
do we not feel that way? I don't know.
I think people have turned on the Astros.
Shit, really?
Like, we were talking before the podcast, like, about the Yankees. It's just the fact that they're winning so much now that for a little bit they were the upstart, the plucky team who was using analytics, and then they started winning so much, and now people just hate them, I think, is what they've turned. They have Roberto Ozuna, which is a completely valid reason to hate them. But I think even beyond that, it's just they're winning so much, and they've been accused of cheating, and they cheated against the Indians, and so I think that people have turned on them a lot, even though they are
interesting.
If you strip out a lot of context, I think, like you wrote about, they are a fun, they have fun players,
mm-hmm.
and also one really shitty human being as a player. But
sure, garbage. But hey, Jose Altuve, so yeah,
and Yordan Alvarez, and the what the
George Springer pitchers. And Correa and Bregman, who was fantastic. I mean, again, they're stacked. They're
Brantley. I mean, there's a big one there.
Brantley, the yeah, exactly.
Michael Brantley could get a World Series. Yeah, which did you see in the last game against the Yankees? I mean, Michael Brantley, the guy who we thought would be shifted to DH anytime soon, he made a huge diving play and then threw a missile. Like, where did that arm come from? And he got a double play. And my favorite part about seeing that was when Brantley was diving, somebody caught a good picture of it, and that tongue was out. Like, in the Michael Brantley tongue where it's not all the way out of his mouth, he just, like, pushes it against his teeth. I was like, oh, man, I remember that. It looks so familiar, and I missed it.
I have to be honest. I never understood where the Michael Brantley doesn't have a great arm thing came from. I always, because that was a classically Michael Brantley play. I don't have the range to make the play like a normal human being, so I'll make it look epic.
That's true, yeah.
But for a left fielder, I've always thought he had a good arm because it was the one almost saving grace whenever they put him in center was that, well, at least he can, you know, maybe throw someone out when they're casually advancing after he couldn't get to the ball. But I've always had it in my head that he could at the very least, you know, throw the ball well. And after hearing like John Smoltz talk about his inability to throw or other guys, I'm like, I thought in my head that's always been a thing. It's one of his three qualities, being awesome, his arm, and his contact ability. So
yeah, see, I never had that. I never thought it was his arm was. I thought everything about his outfield defense was pretty much bad. Like there's even people that thought his range was good. So I guess nobody really knows anecdotally like what Michael Brantley is. It depends on who you ask.
And you're right. I never looked at the numbers.
Like some people will tell you he's just great altogether in the outfield. Some will tell you it's his range is the issue. Some will tell you his arm. So I guess the defensive numbers, of course, are so still weird to look at. So we don't know for sure. But I guess he had a much better year this year, which is even more depressing considering what the Astros signed him for and the Indians let him walk for.
Well, and we always have to look back to, I think, a perfect reasoning a way to kind of square that is, I guess, looking back to what the Astros did to the Indians in that, what was that, 2017? I mean, the Astros are just so much better at finding the best and the best in their players than any other team. Like, even after all this time, they're still far and away in front of people. And you add to that the fact that Brantley has got to play 81 games in what amounts to a bandbox, even if you're a left-hander. That's hence the 22 home runs, you know.
Which is a career high, which was surprising. I always thought I remember Brantley hitting more home runs. But
now that 21 is seared in my memory because I think a couple years ago we did a Let's Go Tribe, like, guess how everyone's going to do. And I said, Michael Brantley's going to have more than 20 home runs. And everyone called me stupid. And I was like, see, everyone, you're stupid, not me. You're
take
the
that,
dumb one.
Everyone. Yeah, it should be a whole post. It's just take that. I guessed it right.
But that's the thing too. Like, yes, he was. I don't know if other people are surprised with how well he did this year. But I expected it, if only because he's not that fucking old. You know, like he's still 32, 33, whatever. Like he still has the ability to do things like this at least for another year or two. So
yeah, is inexcusable the right word to say for the fact that the Indians didn't bring him back? I shift between saying yes and no. Like, 2 years, $32 million. The Indians obviously loved him. He loved the Indians. There was a whole thing about everybody cried when he left. Like, give him the money. $16 million a year, and you really couldn't do that? Like, you paid Danny Salazar whatever you paid him?
Well, having that be the number, the 32 over 2 years, is what makes it borderline. You know, and you know, compounding that is obviously the amount of not offense they got from Jason Kipnis for a similar amount of money, I think, or maybe I don't remember how much he was getting paid his last year, but yes, no,
but they also couldn't have gotten rid on, yeah, they couldn't have gotten out from underneath that money of Jason Kipnis. He was still on contract. So.
I know, but it's you know, we're just pointing out where they fucked up and where they fucked up because they fucked up. You know, it's an issue that compounds itself.
That's a super bad one.
Yes, no, exactly. Just because if they had him starting in April, I think that changes the complexion of the season entirely. That's a couple more wins in April that they pick up that they didn't before, and that means that they're in the playoffs, which, yes, that's just that it would have ended disappointingly, but it would have still at least been a bit less of a disappointing season. Even though I had a lot of fun this year, we would have at least gotten to watch, you know, the lineups in April wouldn't have been the horror shows they were.
Think about that again. I thought about it too much. I don't want to envision that outfield.
There would have at least been Michael Brantley once every nine at bats. You know what I mean? Which is, we dealt with that back in, you know, several years ago. I mean, when, with other players, where we just had one guy to circle in the lineup and go, well, at least we can watch him in a few at bats. So, but yes, it's disappointing that they weren't able to find $32 million to keep him around, because he is such a fan favorite, and he's still, you know, probably the most beloved departed. He's going to be end up probably being the most beloved departed Indian of this kind of core, I think.
I mean, he's up there with what, like Victor Martinez, as far as
I agree. You know, I think that is 100% the caliber and the level that he's at. Like, everyone loves Jason Giddens, but he was never, for 1 year, he was the offensive player that Brantley has a capability to be. And I think, just, you know, we don't remember that very well, only because he was hurt a couple times. But when he's healthy, Brantley is one of the best hitters in baseball. And it's just,
yeah, I think Brantley had enough good years towards the end. I think Kipnis, as unfair as it is, like, his last few poor years are going to erode the opinion of so many people that he's not going to be in that same echelon of,
like, he was cool, but at the same time, you know, it's like, you know, he wasn't.
I think it's also interesting that like CC Sabathia retired. I didn't see, I mean, I guess it's just been so long and nobody associates it with the Indians anymore, that there wasn't a ton of, I mean, people still remembered him and remembered CC fondly and everything, but it's not, there's no connection to Cleveland anymore, pretty much.
Nah, he hasn't played with the Indians for 11 years, you know? It's like, yeah, his last year was, he was traded in, what, May or whatever, 2008, so.
Yeah, I think more people even associate him with the Brewers because of what he did in that half season. Then it goes like Yankees, Brewers, Indians is the, well,
and that's
which
the
is
thing
fine.
About,
I'm happy for CC. I still liked him in Cleveland. Yeah.
When you think about his career, he was with the Indians from, what, 2001 or 2008, and so much of that was, it was the potential you saw in him. Like, he'd come out and just deal filthily for, and then get shelled the next game. And then he won that Cy Young in 07. I think that's the reason he's not remembered more as this, you know, former Indian. He's like, not like, say, Manny Ramirez will be. Manny Ramirez is ensconced in Indians lore in a place that I think C. Sabathia never will be, simply because he was never quite what he could become, I suppose. And then as soon as he left, of course, he had his god, you know, he has god tier run for a year or two there. So I don't know. Maybe I'm misreading that, but I just feel like he was never quite what he could truly become with the Indians, except for 1 year, obviously. And it was just such a brief moment. Like with Cliff Lee, too. I think Cliff Lee is another good example. When you think of Cliff Lee, he's a Philly, even though I still see him
as an Indian, I think.
I do, and you do, obviously.
I guess. But like, see, I don't even see CC as an Indian. I see him as a Yankee first now. But
like, I own a Phillies Lee jersey. It was on sale on the street corner in New York City for half off $6 because I wanted to get rid of it so bad. I was like, ooh, $3 for a shirt, eh? All right. I can't wear it around here very much because it says Phillies. And somehow, even though no one cares about baseball here, they still hate the Phillies. So something's never
done. Is that a rivalry, the Phillies and the Nationals?
Well, everyone in the East just hates the Phillies. And plus, they got Bryce Harper, too. That's part of it, too. So it's if you hate one thing in National League East baseball, it's the Phillies first, and then you figure it out from there.
So this World Series is kind of, I mean, on the subject of Brantley being on the Astros, it's sort of a mini, somebody from the Indians semi-recently is going to get a ring. It's either going to be Yan Gomes or Michael Brantley, and then everybody also sort of forgets that Asdrubal Cabrera is also on the Nationals. He was traded for Zach Balders in 2014, then he bounced between the Rays, Mets, Phillies, Rangers, and then back to the Nats. He was super good for the Nationals this half season, and then in the postseason, he's been nothing, but... Yeah, I mean, who between these three, I guess this is a dumb question because the answer is Brantley, but who do you want to see get a ring more? Is it Brantley, or do you still love Asdrubal Cabrera for some weird reason, or maybe is it Yan Gomes?
I mean, probably Brantley. I just, you know, I mean, like I said before, I guess I didn't read the room correctly. I like the Astros a lot. I think they're a neat team who's predominantly done things the right way. Except, you know, I mean, the cheating, I don't care about. Everyone cheats a little bit. It's fun. The Roberto Zuna thing, I'm less than much of a fan of. But predominantly, that's a great team. You know, they have players that I enjoy watching. And then they got him, who was kind of the, you know, I mean, he was the first, only him and Francisco Lindor and then later on, what's his name, Jose Ramirez, have really gotten like legitimate MVP consideration over this run. He was third in MVP voting in 2014, I believe it was. He had no shot because he was behind Miguel Cabrera and Mike Trout, I believe, but it was still a thing for a minute there, and he had that great year. So he was the first really great player I think the Indians had to come out of this. So they had, you know, Kipnis and Santana were both turning into good players, but he made a certain leap that year that I think is special. So,
and Asdrubal, I forgot he was on the Indians so recently. Like, I forget he plays frequently, but he's only like 33. And I always forget that I forget that he was on the Indians so recently. It seems like a completely different team, even though it was only 2014. And I forget that he's even in the league, let alone in the Nationals, which I think a lot of people do.
Well, because he just gets so little time to, I mean, the Nationals rather have been trying to piece together the second base position between Dozier, Kendrick, and him, obviously. Didn't they trade for him this year, too? Yeah, because he was in Texas this year as well.
Yeah, he wasn't great with the Rangers, and then he was awesome with the Nationals
in the regular season he was there. He definitely doesn't have a starting position, if only because Kendrick's been so good.
And even Yan doesn't, because was it Kurt Suzuki? Did he get injured, or is he still playing?
No, he's still playing. It's just Suzuki, or rather, Yan catches for Corbin, mostly. They've kind of split it up, and then also I think he catches for, he was the one who was catching, what's his name's failed bid for a no-hitter, Anibal Sanchez's. He's definitely a better catcher than Kurt Suzuki. That is obvious when you watch him.
It's not a knock on Yan, but I don't exactly miss that he's gone because I love Roberto Perez so much. So that's another one that, if he gets his ring, fine, but I really want Brantley to get his. So
I mean, well, I just,
for Yan too to be there, but.
I mean, I love Yan Gomes, I think, and I wrote about this, but his entire career has been about things paying off for the Cleveland Indians. Whether it was they got him for Esmeel Rodgers and along with what's his name? Little Mike. Not Big Mike, Little Mike. Now I can't remember the guy's name. Anyway, and they traded him again, and he ended up with who came back in that trade? Daniel Johnson, right?
Daniel Johnson and Jeffrey Rodriguez, who helped.
Yes, exactly.
So
they got vital pieces back for him. So he's definitely, his entire career will be about feeding talent and whatnot into the Indians. So it's nice. He's, you know, it's not going to show up on any histories of the Indians because, you know, the one year that the Indians were really great, he was hurt the entire year and we ended up with Roberto Perez the entire season. But his existence has been one of the most important probably to the Indians' overall successes over the last 5 or 6 years. It's a hard thing to really, you know, see. Also, he's been much worse than Perez offensively this year. So he was just not very good.
That's a rare win for the Indians this offseason was the Yan Gomes trade.
I mean, if Daniel Johnson turns into anything, and by all accounts, he's going to turn into something, that's just an absolute hoodwinking. And
the fact that it let Roberto Perez get free without, because I don't think they could have justified playing Roberto Perez over him,
right,
to give him playing time without, as long as Yan Gomes could still be average. But the fact that Roberto Perez is so good, at least for streaks at a time, then that alone, like, no matter what, Jeffrey Rodriguez, they got a couple starts out of him that kept him afloat. Like, at that point, they already won the trade. But I think definitely Daniel Johnson is going to be something, which is going to just push the value so high.
Right. He's Daniel Johnson. Stupid computer, honestly.
So another thing we can do is that by the time this comes out on Tuesday, we'll be on Let's Go Tribe. We're counting down. We do our year in review, which, in case anybody reads those every year and wonders why we're doing this first, normally we just do like the random miscellaneous players, but everybody stops reading these things after a while. So I wanted to do the MVPs first. So I thought it'd be more interesting, and then we'll just dump everybody else at the end, including Kevin Pilecki, who was the last one chosen to be written about when we had our little pool of, on our sign-up sheet. I think that was,
I had no idea to want to write about him. Damn it, I would have done it. I love Kevin Pilecki.
I grabbed him eventually. It was like everybody else was picked, and then a day later I looked, and it was just Kevin Pilecki was over there. But yeah, this is a time where we can look at, I don't want to get too ahead to spoil anything, but our top 10, our 10 through 6. This is the way we did it. We had every staff member go through and do their own, and then it was a vote kind of thing. I said, if you got first place, you got 10 points, and then so on, and then you need to explain yourself with your number 10. But first we'll do the staff, the way it came out with everything, which is what, if you're listening now and you've read everything, catching up, you already know this, but it's Brad Hand, number 10, Aaron Civale, number 9, Jose Ramirez, 8, Oscar Mercado, 7, and Roberto Perez, 6. So what do you think of those, the way they came out like that? We were talking before that we both had Roberto Perez higher than 6, which I think is kind of incredible. Matt Schlichting had a number 1, which I think there's a conversation for that, even though Shane Bieber and Carlos Santana and Francisco Lindor are all super good. You could talk me into Roberto Perez as the MVP. I had him as number, I think, 5. I guess I just jumped ahead, but I spoiled it. But anyway, what do you think of the way the staff voting came out together? Brad Hand, 10, Savali, Ramirez, Mercado, and Perez.
Thus far? Wait, what was the list again? Did you get? Oh, yeah, there he is, Lupo. Okay, yeah, because I wrote that article. Okay. I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense. The only one I'd think, I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me, I think. Aaron Civale was a revelation.
Oh, wait, you're right. I have it wrong. What am I doing?
I knew it. I knew it. I knew I was okay. Right, and you were wrong. I was the right one.
I skipped Luplo. So it's Brad Hand is 10, Luplo is 9, Savali is 8, Ramirez is 7. There we go. And then Oscar Mercado is 6. And Roberto Perez is 5, since you already know the order of that. So that's what it is. Yeah, Luplo came in at 9, which a platoon bat in the outfield being number 9 in the MVP voting, it says something about the Indians, but also says how good Jordan Luplo was this year.
Right. You know, I mean, the flaw, and I wrote about this, and the reason Mercado was 7th, despite being a league average bat, was they needed stabilizing in the outfield, and that's really what they were missing the entire time. I'm actually a little surprised Hand made it at 10th. Did I vote for him? I probably did, but he was, I think I have a little bit of a kind of a, I wasn't too impressed. I did put him 10th. Damn it. Why didn't I put, I'd put him at 9th.
You got Mike Freeman 10.
Well, shut up. we'll get to that. I mean,
I had Hand 7 on mine, and I after writing about it and looking more into his numbers, because I wrote the, because he was number 10 for the staff, like, I probably would have had him lower and on the list. I forgot how bad he was in the second half.
Because, and that's the thing, you know, it's just that by the second half, they were having to start piecing it together. And if I were to say Indians bullpen as a player, then that would have been certainly, you know, 9th or 8th, but it's just things. He was so not reliable in the second half. So, by that same token, who else are you going to put there? Because there were steep drop-offs with this team, if we're being honest. There were, you know, this was as close to stars and scrubs as you can get. It's where any of their Pacoda projections were coming from at the beginning of the year. You know, it was all like, well, their starting rotation's really good, and Ramirez and Lindor are fantastic, and then they'll figure it out the rest of the way. And that's kind of why you see the back end of this whole choice being, you know, a bullpen guy, a platoon bat, and a rookie pitcher. So that being said, Zavala's fantastic. I have such high hopes for him, and maybe I'm completely off base on this, but he's demonstrated such a combination of poise and I think a refined skill of how to pitch as opposed to just how to throw, simply because he doesn't have the raw stuff to do it. Honestly, who else are you going to put there? I mean, the fact that Jose Ramirez came in 7th, it was is a little, or 6th or 7th, whatever, is a little depressing.
He's like the flip-flop of Brad Hand, how bad he was in the beginning, and then he turned around
at the end. Right, exactly, yeah. And I think that gave us a lot of hope going into next year about how good he was. And, of course, Mercado, if he can just learn how to hit consistently, then maybe we got something.
Yeah, and if this list was like a looking forward to 2016, I think, or 2020,
Jesus Christ,
Ramirez would be way back up there again. Like, I'm not worried at all about him anymore.
No, same here. And I don't know what happened. No one knows. Bad luck, weird decision making, just weird sequencing. Because, you know, and that's just a weird thing that can happen to players or an entire team for an entire year. Just being, if you'll remember, it was 2014, I think, or 15, one of those years they didn't make the playoffs, where they should have been like 10 runs or 10 wins better, but they kept on scoring all these runs at the wrong times. And I think Ramirez was just hitting the ball. He was hitting the ball incredibly hard all year, but he just was pulling it foul or hitting it right at people or striking out a lot, obviously. So,
well, remember the big issue at one point was he was, Matt Schlichting wrote about it, is that he was trying to beat the shift so hard, and then he just, it might have messed with him or something, but then his agent apparently told him, just stop, just hit the ball the way you're supposed to, just pull the ball. And then when he started doing that again, like, you can clearly see if you match up his WRC plus with his pull rate, like, it is very much, it's when he stopped pulling the ball, he stops
hitting
well.
There's a correlation.
That's the word I'm looking for. I think that's pretty interesting that everybody just says, oh, just beat the shift. But if you've got as good as you are as Jose Ramirez by pulling the ball and hitting it far, then just keep doing that. They can shift on you all you want. If you're hitting it over their heads, who cares?
I mean, literally.
Which is what I think he eventually learned.
That's what Ted Williams always said. You know, you can't put people in the bleachers. So just do that. Yeah.
And the worrying thing is who the hell told him to beat the shift and kept telling him to try to do that?
And this is, I think, the biggest question that will never be answered. You know,
we'll never know. There's no.
But we will never know who got into his ear about trying to go the opposite way. Like, you can. So in 2016, he did do that, right? He didn't just pull the ball consistently. He did spray the ball around a bit more. Like, his numbers were basically that of Michael Brantley circa the year before, pretty much. And maybe someone said to him, look, man, they're always trying to get you. So just hit like he did in 2016, but that's 2-3 years ago. It's hard to do. He turned into something else entirely. And to say you can't win an MVP while pulling the ball, I mean, go look at, you know, Mike Trout's pull rate, for God's sake. It's not like he's going opposite field all the time. So
there's a reason everybody pulls the ball. It's because it works. You can shift it all you want. It's really, I don't know if it's Van Berkelio was telling him, to pull up? The guy who doesn't change anything over 8 years? Or?
I just wish. Yeah, right. Let's say that. But I just wish we could just know. I just wish someone would just tell me. Like, that's the thing. Like, even if we got like a tell, the most boring book on earth would be a tell all of the 2018-19, like this era of Indians. But just small little questions like that are just things I want answers about. And I'll never have them. And that's fine. I just wish I had them. So what are you going to do?
Let's see. Anything else interesting about our 10 through 6 I can think of? I mean, you had Mike Freeman at 10. That's worth reiterating.
Look, the point I had in my head when I put Mike Freeman at 10 was the same that I had when putting Luke Lowe at like 6 or whatever I did.
You had him at 8, and that's completely fair, I think. I think Luke Lowe at 8, I didn't have him there, but I can buy that
one. The entire team was trying to figure it out, and there were massive holes across the roster. And Mike Freeman wasn't terrible this year. Maybe he was. I don't remember now. But he at least allowed for, I don't know, utility players are important. And he was, I feel, played a vital role. You know, what is valuable? Obviously, when we start talking about actual baseball, it's being, you know, valuable and winning games and whatnot. And being Mike Trout is what valuable is. But Mike Freeman was a league average bat with, you know, 213 plate appearances. And he allowed for guys to take days off and made it so there wasn't a drop off, I suppose. I mean, goddamn, it's better than playing Max Muroff, you know, or
Ryan Flaherty, which I kept doing even though I didn't have to.
Or any of the Hanley Ramirez, like he outhit Hanley Ramirez and, you know, Carlos Gonzalez, guys who actually have a history of hitting the ball well. He was not that much worse than Yasiel Puig, for God's sake.
It is definitely fair to put him there. The thing with him was that all his stats look fine, but then you look at like his baseball savant stuff and his exit velocity and expected batting average, and he is clearly going to drop off a cliff.
Yes, no, and there's no hope here. It's just right. What it is, but it's.
But yeah, if you're doing MVP, I mean, you look at the results, and the results were that he's probably a number 10, which is where you had him, which I think is fair. But I just like it's Mike Freeman.
If I was going to redo it, maybe I'll put Franmil Reyes there because of smiles or something like that. I don't know.
You didn't have Aaron Civale on your list, so maybe he would have been number 10.
Did I not have Aaron? I think I was a little put off by Savali just having like 50 innings or something like that.
Yeah.
What 57 innings. And like, I liked him a lot, but it's just, I think
not enough there.
I think there was not a value in a wins above replacement thing, because if we're going with that, then Savali just smokes Freeman hands down. But in terms of allowing the team to make it through 162 games, which it's a value in and of itself. I think that it wasn't quite there. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with how mine went. With Freeman, Hand, Lupo, Ramirez, Clevinger were my 10 through 5.
And me and you both had Clevinger pretty low, relatively.
He was injured.
The 10 through 6.
I just think that's what it is. Like, he was injured, and at least that was in my rationale. And there were just other guys who played more all season who were just as important. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
And our weird beloved, you know, our weird love of, not even weird, normal love of Roberto Perez is unimpeachable, I think.
Normal, healthy love of Roberto Perez.
If I was going to do it again, honestly, I might like take Brad Hand out there and put like Whitgren or something in there instead, or like even like Oliver Perez, or I don't even know. It's just.
Yeah, Whitgren. There were stretches where he was super good. And
right? That doesn't mean.
He's had a couple bad games. I mean, even Nick Goody, he was really bad at the end. I mean, he's similar to Brad Hand. He had a good streak and then is just shit all over the place. But that seems like a lot of the Indian relievers were. There wasn't one reliever who was good all season, was there?
No, they had their ebbs and their flows.
They all had. Yeah, Nick Wickerman was reliable for the most part, but he was bad at points. And
I will say that too, though. That's something that we have forgotten about as Indians fans, because how good the bullpen was for so long. It's just sometimes your bullpen just shits the bed. And it just happens, and there's nothing you can do about it. They're all pretty good pitchers who were, you know, whatever. In fact, I probably would have put Savali in place of Hand if I did it again, just because he was so important for those 10 games that he did start.
Four home runs. Yeah, neither of us had Plesak either, which I think.
Yeah, I don't know about Zach Plesak, man. I don't know. I don't know. I just oof.
I mean, he's the same as like Mike Freeman, but as a pitcher, like the results were okay, but clearly that might not be lasting forever. So that was my reason for not doing it, was that my choice is basically Aaron Civale or Zach Plesac for number 10. And because of basically the reasons you listed, that Civale just does so much so well that I had to put him as 10 over Plesak is looking a lot more luck based so far.
Yes, yeah. There's way less to be excited about going forward, unless he can learn to start missing bats or something, which is not something that is impossible. You look at a guy like Shane Bieber; his strikeout rates have leapt precipitously between 1 year and the next. And I think Savali could do something very similar. His profile is similar to that of someone like Bieber, because he just doesn't have anything truly filthy, but the sum of the parts is truly great, and I can't wait to watch him. I'm mad it's the off season because I can't wait. I can't watch him every 5 days and just track the development anymore.
The depressing part is going to be, like, with everybody back, it's Kluber, Carrasco, Clevenger, Bieber, and then is it going to be Plutko Merritt? Is
that... It better fucking not be. Sorry to cuss, but Jesus Christ.
How dare you cuss on my podcast, man?
I'd be cussing. I can't.
It's going to be Plutko Merritt.
I just don't.
I'm scared. Plutko at all, dude. It's going to be Adam Plutko.
I just can't watch him pitch anymore. His time is so far past at this point.
It was so short, but it's already past. I'm really worried it's going to be Plutko.
He's a man outside of time is his problem.
He just warps in and out. I've seen him blink before in the game where he just disappears and comes back.
He would have been so good on the Twins in 2007 or something.
Yeah,
one of those like game winner, yeah. You know, just get a decent amount of ground balls, luck his way into an 18-7 record with a 3.40 ERA. I remember going, "This is not a
Plutko." I think in a just world, it's going to be Savali, but
yes, one can hope, because I'm hoping the work pans out in the offseason. He gets a couple ticks on the fastball or learns a changeup or something. Because I know I love what he does when he pitches, but it also makes me nervous as hell because he's just pitching up in the zone so much. You're like, God damn, he's gonna get hammered anytime now. One of these 92 mile an hour cutters is not gonna cut,
and then it's all over.
And then it's all over.
Turns into Adam Plutko.
Oh, which is God, great. No. Adam Plutko just doesn't throw any good. Jesus Christ, I don't get it.
Who doesn't
get it? Plutko. He just doesn't throw any good pitches. He's got nothing.
No. Great guy. I always feel like we should say that when we.
Yes, seems like a nice guy.
A nice fellow. I want to meet him, but
yes,
he's got a cool dog.
I guess his slider is pretty good.
Yeah, I just don't want. I mean, Savali's better. I think he has the higher upside, but it's gonna be Plutko. So, Matt, what do you say we finish up the episode answering some questions, which I don't think we've done even recent episodes. But I figured since there's not a whole lot going on anyway, we'll fill up some time with some questions that people might have. Which a lot of them revolved around free agents, which I think is going to be what happens between now and free agency. But there's only so many times we can say the Indians aren't going to sign anybody, but we can at least take one of them and then
look. The issue is Mike Trout signed an extension, a 12-year extension. All right,
that was their only target was Mike Trout.
We can't get him. I'm sorry, guys. Turns out these contracts are ironclad. He's going to be until 2030.
We tried to sneak in, but we just can't cut it up the contract. It doesn't work like that. They got a digital and shit everywhere, multiple hard drives. It's really ridiculous.
I tried to use my katana. It would not work.
Some guy going to the Angels facility with his katana to free Mike Trout from the Angels.
Free Mike Trout! Sir, this is it's not even here. It's at the lawyer's office. Sir. Oh, thank you.
So our first question is, we'll start with the free agency one. At Esperity Artist, he says, so I have very unrealistic expectations. I don't know what the front office should or could do this offseason. And we'll certainly write a fan post about it. That'd be cool as a coping mechanism. But as a coping mechanism is a good way to cope with it. It's just get it out there. Really therapeutic. But what are some reasonable signings trades they could make for 2020, like future Indian Howie Kendrick? Realistically, it's like what Brian Dozier is out there. Nothing's going to change. It's their typical find a veteran who they can catch lightning in a bottle and good luck, right? I think Puig's going to be cheaper than we all think because he really hasn't been great over the last couple of years. So maybe they could bring him back. But it sure sounded like Puig was saying goodbye to Cleveland in his Instagram post. But he seemed to like the city a lot. If there's going to be a surprise, I think it'd be him. Josh Donaldson's going to be too expensive, right? That could
Josh
be a surprise.
Donaldson has earned himself quite some cake this year, yes.
Yeah.
Although, again, you know, it's like he's 34 at this point, so
right.
You could sit here and talk yourself into it if you really wanted to.
But based on what we know about the Indians, they didn't make the postseason, so all that free agent money doesn't exist now. Mm-hmm. It's how they operate. They don't. They do their free agent signings based on the bonus money they get from the World Series, which is
insulting and disgusting. Ryan Zimmerman, thoughts? Yeah.
Anthony Rendon?
Get out of here. I already thought about that. No. Get out of here, you crazy boy. I don't know. I guess we have to take a step back and what are the holes? Second base,
I mean, it's either second or third if you put Jose Ramirez at one.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
he doesn't want to move around, but you pick one and you can.
I'm picking second because I'd prefer him to stay at third. Second base and.
I think the issue there is second, you have fewer options. There's a lot of good third basemen, but I guess that's true. Also the Indians aren't going to get one of the good third basemen, right. So who cares?
Right. And then an outfield spot, maybe. I don't know. Cole Calhoun? I don't know. He stinks. Todd Frazier's a free agent, I think.
I don't want Todd Frazier.
I don't know how you feel about Todd Frazier.
I mean, Marcell Ozuna. I wanted him a couple years ago. He could be like a rebound candidate and only 29. I kind of like that idea.
Rebound for what? Hitting 27 home runs, having a pretty good year? Wasn't he good this year?
I thought Marcell Ozuna was pretty bad this year.
I thought he was good.
Was it just bad in the outfield, maybe?
Yes, he was just trash in the outfield is the issue. Okay. Yeah, I mean, he had an 800 OPS. I mean, he wasn't fantastic and all of
that's what I've wanted him on the Indians for a while. He's
all of St. Louis.
It was Yasiel Puig and Marcell Ozuna when he was super good. I wanted him on the Indians.
Right, no, exactly. I remember I won MVPs with him in out of the park baseball.
There's this fellow named Carlos Gonzalez. He's a free agent.
Get out of here. Podcast over.
But I think they're not going to do a big outfielder. I think if they do surprise us, I think if you count Yasiel Puig as a surprise, maybe they could do that.
Well, it's just
if Josh Donaldson ends up like Edwin Encarnacion a few years ago, maybe.
All they need is a left-handed right fielder and a left fielder. And I don't think that they're really going to try and go after a left fielder necessarily, because they probably want to see what they have in one of the young guys.
If you say Jake Bowers, I'm going to...
Listen, you got to shut up and believe in Jake Bowers, all right? I mean,
you know, Grant Brisby even called out the Indians. He said right after Michael Brantley made his catch, he just pointed out that the Indian starting left fielder was Jake Bowers with 78 WRC plus.
Look, you got to believe in the kid, all right? He's still so young at 29 or whatever the hell. I don't even know how old he is.
I think he's way younger than 29.
I know.
Yandy Diaz is 29.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. You know, I mean, Jake Bowers is still, he was the youngest guy on the team all year. And it was a team that had a bunch of rookies on it too. I don't know. I'm not saying that he is the hope, but the hope is one of Jake Bowers or any of these other young guys, like
see what's going on. Bradley Zimmer's going to be back. That's the reason I don't think they're going to get anybody. Is
right, exactly. They're going to hope for the best, I think, again. And then for right field, I don't know. Who's a right fielder? Who's a left-handed right fielder they could go after? Let's see. I can't even pick a right-handed. This stupid website. I hate this. Lonnie, I mean,
Jason Hayward. Is he right-handed? I don't know. Adam Eaton's out there. He's not very good. I mean, Adam Jones, if they want to not let that slip away again, although he'd finish not very good, but that's going to be a conversation again, is that the Indians should shine him, even though I don't think they should. But
Lonnie Chisenhall. Lefty. That's what they need. They need a lefty right fielder, and that's Lonnie Chisenhall. He's coming back, baby.
I would not hate that. Pair him with Jordan Luplow.
I'd love it. Are you kidding me? 2 years ago, that was an amazing platoon, whether they had in left field or right field.
Brendan Guyer. And,
him and Chisenhall was ridiculous. Now Chisenhall will fall apart. So they need to get a different right fielder. But
yeah, Chisenhall didn't even play this year for the Pirates, which is fun.
Yeah, he didn't do anything. So he'll be healthy. You know, he'll be rested up.
Yeah,
that's the best I could think of. I'm sorry, question asker, because anyway.
I do want to know what his unrealistic expectations are. So what they should do. Anthony Rendon.
I think the Donaldson one is less unrealistic than the Rendon one for so many reasons, but the specific one being you can sign it for 2 years.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, Rendon is he even going to take a 2 year contract? You know, that's the thing. Like, is he
he's
just 34, stuck taking?
Like,
right. Exactly. I mean, he had a great year, but the way baseball is played anymore, it's like we don't want to sign you to extend a contract because we're dicks, so we're not going to do it. And everyone's like, "You guys are dicks." Yep. So,
but I mean, we've talked about it before. I don't think they're bad contracts. Like, you're not going to get them to do it. Josh Donaldson should have like $500 million already because of how good he was when he was younger.
Exactly. He should have signed a $500 million contract 6 years ago or 7 years ago or something like that, but he was trapped under a shitty contract.
He should have been allowed to and not making $500,000 because of arbitration and
precisely
the league minimum garbage.
I mean, he's still gonna walk away with a dickload of money, but it's still depressing.
And again, the issue is never that the baseball players are rich, it's that the owners are so much richer, like countless times, and they just have the money in their hoarding.
These owners are wealthy and not spending the money on things that matter to us, the fan. And they can kiss my ass.
Just getting yachts. big houses.
Yeah, they're getting 300. They're trading in their $200 million yacht and getting a $300 million yacht with a custom made.
They can't afford to pay Michael Brantley $32 million over 2 years.
I hate you, Dan Snyder. Sorry.
So our next question, we'll wrap it up with this one, is at NLP4HDH. He says, I hope I'm not too late. You're not. That's good timing. Who's to blame on Yandy and Gio flourishing at other destinations? And then the second part, would Mickey ever come back? The first part, I think Giovanni or Shella, maybe we've talked about this on the podcast, I don't know. I don't blame the Indians for that. They gave him plenty of chances.
Yeah, he left was... like 8 years ago. It was forever ago, to be honest with you.
It clearly wasn't just the Indians. The Blue Jays missed it too.
Yep.
He was so bad offensively. The defense was always there. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. He's been really lucky this year with the Yankees as part of it. I'd be really happy for him if he succeeded. It would have been really – I would have loved for him to stick around in Cleveland and had it work out where he was good offense. Him and Lindor were such good friends. Just imagine the Indians infield if he could hit the way he did in New York this year with Urshela, Lindor, and Jose Ramirez all playing defense, Carlos Santana at first base, and Roberto Perez. That's the best infield in baseball.
They could spend even less money on their outfield then. Think about that.
That's what I think about is just how little money they can spend. That's what I'm aiming for is for the Indians to save money.
Can you guys cut payroll a little bit, please? Just cut it a little bit more. Just a little bit more. Thanks, guys.
Yandy, I think, is all on the coaching staff. I mean, whether it's Tito not giving him playing time, Van Berkelio, clearly when he got to Tampa Bay, it wasn't that hard to fix him. They knew what to do, and he had way
He's not doing anything different, Matt. He's not doing anything different at all. If you look at his batting profile, it's the same. This is purely on Terry Francona's stubbornness to not play him.
Yeah.
It's purely on,
because he wasn't bad either when he was in Cleveland. Like
his numbers are damn near the same. Like that's the thing. If you give a guy a chance to play, he will eventually settle in, and the numbers will, you know.
Shocker how
that works. Literally, he has the same exact OPS over the last 2 years. I mean, yes, we're talking about a difference of 109 to 307 at bats, but and a batting average drop. You know, but regardless, it's. He's not doing anything different. He just was able to play. And like I said before, this falls not even on quote unquote the coaching staff. I think this falls purely on Terry Francona not wanting to play him because
he wouldn't take grounders or whatever the bullshit was.
Well, or he wanted to play Jason Kipnis because he's one of I don't want to get into the whole his guys argument, even though I know it's a thing. This is, I think, one of the problems with having a cult of personality type manager. Which is a dying out thing. There's, what, three of them left at this point, maybe. And I don't even know who the third would be. But for the most part, managers today are an extension of the front office, and they do basically what the front office suggests is the right choice. And I don't know if the front office said, hey, maybe you should play him, and he said no. But the fact is, if you have Terry Francona and you're paying him as much as you are, you can't tell him what to do as much as you can tell Gabe Kapler or Torey Lovullo or... Who's another manager? I don't remember.
Struggling to think of three major league managers. They're so faceless now. Like Gabe Kapler's fired. He can't even do him anymore.
Damn it, really? Shit. That's right. He did get fired. Alex Cora or, you know, like the manager of the Astros, whose name escapes me at the moment. AJ Hinch, yes. I'm sure he's a good manager, but A, gets the American League because there's many levers to pull, and B, he just, you know... He doesn't really have to do all that much. He's got an extension of what Lunau wants. It's simply the function of what the...
Which I think we're learning that's a desirable thing, to find somebody who's willing to accept those numbers as what they do. Like, well, you can give him all the numbers he wants. If he's not doing it, then...
Right. And I think that's just... And you read this a lot on... If you follow a lot of, like, hitting and pitching Twitter guys, you know, the thing the Astros do better than anyone else is communicating the numbers to the player in a way that shows them how they can best be better. You know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah,
when Cole got there, it's like, stop throwing sinkers. And he's like, why this? Oh, all right. And he stopped doing it. And now
it's
he's
that
unhittable.
Conduit. It's the most important thing is just giving them somebody who can relate the information to him. I don't know if it's Hinch or somebody on the Astros is really good at it.
But like you look at someone like Yandy Diaz and it's just everyone in the world could see this happening. You know, everyone like, you know, it's like I read an article a while back about when football coaches make stupid decisions or whatever. You know, like, yes, they've been doing it for 25 or 30 years, but just because they've been doing it that long doesn't mean they can't do dumb things every now and again. There's times when we as just normal human beings standing from the outside can be more right than the guy who has 30 years of experience. Experience isn't the only thing that makes it good, you know what I mean? So
I mean, that makes it bad sometimes, is when you're repeating the same mistakes over and over, and it looks right to you when you're that close to the action. Like, sometimes it's better to have the perspective of somebody. But I think usually in baseball, that ends up being the front office who can see it a little bit further away than a manager, mm-hmm. and they can figure out which numbers to use. And even in football, I'm sure there's – I don't know how much front office input front offices have for coaches yet, but, I mean, at some point there's going to be guys who can take a step back and see everything with a wider lens than what starting coaches do.
Okay, so Yandy Diaz's batting profile, just for those curious. His ground ball rate dropped 2%, basically. His fly ball rate jumped 9%. His line drive rate dropped 5 or 6%. And he started pulling the ball 4% more. I mean, yes, these are changes. Yes, you're right. But I don't know if how much of what he was doing last year was, again, it was only, what, 107 at-bats. Like, how much of that was noise or whatever, you know? So I'm going to Terry Francona is a fine manager, one of the best of all time. I think he'll be in the Hall of Fame one day. But this, I think, is a glaring mistake that I don't think the Indians are going to pay for it for the next however many years. Like, he was only, what, 1.5 wins above replacement this year. He was a fine bat, not some MVP.
Yeah, but it's still
it looked really bad the first half of the year. That's for darn sure. But but I just it's frustrating when things like this happen, and you're just like, why? Yeah. We got one. What was it? First half 121. I mean, it wasn't even that great. But yeah, anyway, March and April 158 WRC plus. That looked really bad. There it is.
And second half of his question: would Mickey ever come back? I hope not. It's, I think, based on what we read in the MVP machine, it was nope. I don't want him back. He is very much an old school. He would be. I'm sure Terry Francona would love him back. He's very old school. Do it my way kind of thing. I want less of those people.
I want people who actually embrace what's actually happening in actual baseball. Yeah. Is baseball today my most favorite version of the game I watched in my entire life? No, not really, but that doesn't matter. What matters for these guys is the winning, and if you're doing something in the way you do things is getting in the way of winning, then maybe it's time to make a change.
Yeah, and this doesn't really have anything quite to do with it, but I thought about this a long time ago, a while now, especially that his name's coming up for the Mets. Like, Eduardo Perez is a guy that I listened to MLB Network radio quite a bit, and it seemed like maybe even just recently, as a year ago, he was not a guy that was, he just didn't seem like he was that advanced on everything. But now he's always at like Saber conferences. He's on more shows than MLB Network. He seems like a really smart guy, and he was really able to adapt to it. I don't think he was too much into it to begin with, but
he's the just one that alone. He does the StatCast broadcast with Mike Petrillo and Jason Benetti. Yeah, exactly.
And he's so good too. Even if he wasn't, if he got to this point and he's still, if he's not as good as like AJ Hinz, the fact that he's learned so much and changed so much, that enough would be like, I want him as a manager. I would love to have him manage the Indians. And
what you just said is the most surprising thing to me, is that it's evident that he learned, right? It's evident he noticed something happening in baseball and he adjusted to it. The Houston Astros didn't walk anyone intentionally all year. I'm sure everyone knew that, but it's still one of the craziest things in the world to me. These are things that teams who are on the forefront do and do not do. And meanwhile, Terry Francona is sack bunting,
72,000 times.
I mean, twice a week. This is, it's just, you know, again, like I said before, he's a great manager, but when you have a cult of personality type of guy, yes, he was vital in, I think, getting the Indians where they are now, maybe. But this is just the lack of intellectual curiosity, maybe, could be one way.
That's
to
a good
way
to put it.
I don't know. You know,
it's
I,
not that
I,
he's
it's
dumb.
Just,
he's just not interested in seeking out new ways to do things.
There's been studies that show that you stop really trying to actively learn sometime in your 30s, and if you think about that, that thought and people you've talked to in your life and anything, writers, anyone, there's a certain calcification around 30, 35 that does occur in whether it's in industries, whether it's in your boss, whoever. Maybe that didn't happen for Terry Francona at 35, maybe at 45, but whatever. And that's why, you know, someone like Eduardo Perez doing that is, it's remarkable, as you said, because seeing a guy in his 50s or 60s or whatever, notice, realize, and adjust himself to it, that should really be a rarity, but it is. It's quite impressive. Though. Yeah, so that's, I don't know.
Yeah, I've been following his stuff a lot recently. I really want him to get a job somewhere, whether it's the Mets, poor guy, or he goes somewhere better, but because like you said, he's on StatCast broadcast. He's great. I listened to some of his stuff at Saber, and
what I like about the stat, him being on that, is like Petrillo, you know, he's a writer, and he just kind of, he does what he does, and he kind of points out the numbers in a raw sense, and Perez really turns it into baseball talk. And I think that is that is that conduit. You know what I mean? That's that conduit going from just these are some numbers to this is why this is important. I remember the Pirates were doing that a couple years ago. They were having a front office guy traveling with the team and stuff, trying to be that conduit. But I think that's just the wrong way of psychologically doing it. It needs to be it helps if it's a former player type or whatever, you know? That's why, I don't know, maybe that's why it helped with Clevinger when Bauer was talking to him versus whoever. You know, it's got to be someone you trust before you change what you're doing to become something different.
Yeah. All right, Merritt. That's going to do it for us this week. Next time we talk, the World Series, it probably shouldn't be over, right?
When it'll be start? Over. Nats champions, baby. Woo.
Nats in four. I don't know. It'll either be a sweep or it'll be... there'll be something to talk about anyway. We'll probably be closer to free agency and actual news for the Indians out of the slowest month of the season when your team's out of it. So it'll be fun. We'll be around in the off season talking about the Indians. There's always something to talk about. We can just do random things. We can get weird with it in the podcast. So we'll have lots of stuff to do.
So there's this beer you can get from up near Detroit, I think. It gets mentioned in a Kid Rock song called Strohs. Perhaps you've heard of it. Anyway,
totally.
The reason I mentioned this is because it sounds like Strohs, like Astros. And then also up in Baltimore is you can get National Bohemian or Natty Bo or Bo.
Is this a sign the Nats are going to win the World Series?
I was just saying to my brother last night, I was like, hey, Strohs and Bows, baby, because DC doesn't have its own beer. But the most local garbage beer that we have is Natty Bo. So anyway, that's just an idle thought I had last night that made me laugh. And
clearly Nats in four.
There we go.
There you go. On that note, Merritt, talk to you next week.
See you.